Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro. Today, we're going to be going into the Salt and Light closet and pulling out some of our favorite conversations from the winter and spring of 2025. We start by speaking with Catholic astronaut Tom Jones, and we learn about a special experience that they were able to have on board the space station. After that, we meet singer-songwriter Grace Lee. In our second half hour, we speak with filmmaker Mauro Borelli about his film, The Last Supper. And at the end of the program, we reconnect with singer-songwriter Kate Curran, who has new music. But we begin now with A Catholic in Space. Tom Jones is a veteran NASA astronaut who flew on four space shuttle missions, including three spacewalks to install the centerpiece of the International Space Station. In total, Tom Jones has spent 53 days working and living in space. On his second expedition in 1994, Tom was one of three crew members who were practicing Catholics aboard NASA's Endeavour, and they received a very special privilege. To learn more about this experience and his experiences being a Catholic astronaut, earlier this week, I spoke with Tom Jones. Tom, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's good to meet you.
Thank you, Deacon. It's good to be with you, too.
I know it's not, I know for you it's different, but for us, it's not every day we meet an astronaut. So this is a little exciting. I wanted to start by asking you, obviously, about your faith. And you don't hide your faith in the book Skywalking, which is, I think, we can say that it's like your main book. In the book, later on in one of the later chapters, you write, "Never have I felt so insignificant, part of a scene so obviously set by God. Emotions welled up inside, gratitude for how well the mission had gone, humility at my tiny importance in this limitless cosmos, and wonder at his glories revealed." And then you say, you quote Buzz Aldrin, who radioed the words of King David from Psalm 8, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him?" Tom, you wrote this while you were referring about one of your during one of your spacewalks.
Right.
Can you tell us about that feeling?
I was in awe. I was out there near the end of three spacewalks back in 2001 up at the space station. And so I had a few minutes. I asked Houston if I could get 5 minutes just to be a human being out there, not a technician,
right,
to look at the scene. And they said, "We're ahead of schedule. You take five. Of course, take some time." And so I was able to look around from the very front of the space station and pivot around this vast scene out there in front of me. And I was there in my space helmet. You can see from one ear to the other as you turn your eyes and your head around.
Right.
And so it was a limitless view. Out there ahead of me, it was 1,000 miles to the Earth's horizon. And this luminous, glowing blue ocean was down below me with the white clouds crossing its surface. And so past my boots down to the ocean, it was 220 miles. And then up above me were these golden solar arrays of the space station. And they reminded me of the sails of a silent windjammer, a sailing ship that was just cruising, falling around the Earth every 90 minutes. So here I am on this silent ship flying around our home planet looking at creation. And it was so beautiful in every direction. You had this brilliant gold above me against the black velvet sky, the blue of the Earth's horizon, and the thin band of the atmosphere. So naturally, to anybody, that would be awe-inspiring. It would be
yes,
soul-moving. But I also felt that here, you know, God had pulled back the curtain on creation by putting me there. I was up there with my four crewmates and, you know, sharing time with them looking out the window. But this was a moment when I felt like I was by myself out there experiencing this view of creation. So I felt very grateful for the gift that he'd given me of seeing just a little bit of the cosmos that he'd created. And at the same time, when you look at the scale of that, you shrink to insignificance, absolute humility about you know, one human being's place in all of this creation and how magnificent it is. So it was my most moving 5 minutes that I had to myself in all of my 53 days in space. And it was really a truly a gift from God and a real insight for me.
Yeah, what a wonderful what an opportunity experience. I was surprised in reading your memoir that you, I don't know if this happened before every mission, but at least before your second mission, you had a chance to have mass with a priest, I believe was a friend of yours. And how unusual is it that three of you, of your crewmate, like you and two other crewmates were Catholic, and that that was an important moment for you? Or were you able to have mass before every mission?
Well, let's see. I wouldn't say I got mass before, every mission. No, not every mission.
Okay.
Because of the way the timing of the quarantine
right.
worked out. But on this first mission, there were three Catholics out of the six of us. And that is somewhat unusual, a high percentage of Catholics uh-huh. on the crew. And our commander got his parish priest to come out there to the crew quarters where we're quarantined medically for a week before
okay.
launch.
Yep.
So he had to go through a physical exam so he could get cleared to come out. But he came out to say mass with all of our, with us and our families on
Beautiful.
Easter Sunday.
Yeah,
during
okay.
quarantine.
Okay.
So that was quite a unifying experience. We really felt grateful for the blessing that we got that day. And then it was just a few days later that we flew down to the Cape and then got ready for our launch into space. Mm. So on other occasions, I've had my parish pastor
right.
come out and
okay.
say mass with us on my third mission over at the crew quarters as well. Had a few of my crewmates join me for that too. So it's always been good for me and a boost in my confidence, and I get reassurance from having the mass, having the Eucharist, and then having a chance to go to confession at that time too. So
yeah.
that was always good prep for clearing the mind for
Absolutely.
Heading off to do this demanding job.
Yeah, I'd never even thought about going to confession. On one of the trips, I believe it was your second one, you were one of your crewmates was also a Eucharistic minister, and he was able to bring the Eucharist into space with you?
True, yes. My first flight with Kevin Chilton as the pilot, he's the Eucharistic minister at my parish, St. Bernadette's in
okay.
Houston back then. And so he was able to get permission to bring the Eucharist for the other two Catholics on board. And we did have that communion service in orbit. And I had not talked to anybody else who had done that. I'm not saying that we were the first Catholics to ever have a communion service in space, but it was certainly our communion service in space.
Oh, absolutely.
And a very moving experience too.
Was that something that you spoke about ahead of time, or he thought this is something that I can do because I'm a Eucharistic minister?
No, we talked about
yeah.
when we would find time to just get a few minutes to have the readings for that Sunday and then share the Eucharist and have a communion together. And it turned out that that occurred not the first Sunday that we were in space. We were still too busy getting set up for our mission. But
mm-hmm.
a week later, things were in a routine and we managed to align our overlapping shift schedules up in orbit so that all three of us were awake at the same time.
Okay.
And we could grab 10 minutes or so to have this service. So, you know, we planned it a day or so in advance, got together with the readings for that Sunday. The three of us were up on the flight deck of Endeavor in the darkness with the cockpit lights on. We could read the readings and share those. And then again, this amazing moment happened where the sun rose through the front windows of the cockpit, just like in an airliner cabin.
Uh-huh.
And the sun burst through the windows and hit us in the face just as we were sharing communion from Kevin distributing communion to Sid and me. And so that seemed to be just a wonderful moment where God was saying, here, I'm with you. Jesus
mm-hmm.
was saying he was with us in the Eucharist. And then I happened to be so moved by that, I turned away from my friends. I didn't want them to see, you know,
right.
tears in my eyes. And I looked out the window to the back, and there's this beautiful blue of the ocean, this deep violet ocean down below. And I said, Kevin, look at that. And he said, Tom, that's the same blue as in the Virgin's veil.
Aww.
And so it was just a wonderful inspiration to have that shared spirituality together on Endeavor.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems to me that you were already practicing your faith when you joined NASA initially. But would you say that your faith grew stronger throughout the time that you were a mission specialist, an astronaut?
I don't think it grew stronger. It was confirmation for me that
okay.
I'd been on the right path, and I'd been a lifelong Catholic. So
yeah.
this was something that seemed natural to me to experience the Eucharist, experience some companionship
mm-hmm.
from fellow Catholics and my crewmates who were moved spiritually as well while we were up there, to have that experience in space where you do get a peek at the rest of the cosmos in a way that we usually don't get to see down here. So you can look out one side of the window of the windows of the cabin, and there's the Earth 200 miles away, and that's your home where everybody else that you know and everything that you've done and lived is on that surface. And you look the other way, and it's infinity, and you see clouds of stars if you give yourself a few minutes to adapt your eyes to it. And there is the rest of the cosmos, which seems to go on forever. And that's all his handiwork. Yeah. So it's very inspirational.
Would you say that your Catholic faith informed your work as a scientist and as an astronaut? And maybe even the other way around, that your work as an astronaut maybe informed your Catholic faith?
I think it goes both ways. I think that as a Catholic, you bring to science the wonder at the universe that we are part of, and you marvel at the Creator has put all that matter, all that glowing night sky, this wonderful luminous planet of ours, all in the same cosmos, and then you're a creature who can start to perceive a little bit of that wonder. So that's something I brought to science as I went into that field. Mm-hmm. And then I think as an astronaut, you know, you get this visceral sense of how vast the cosmos is and how wonderful it looks and how marvelous it is in all of its variation. And I think you see in yourself and in your crewmates this curiosity and this drive to explore and this drive to understand. And that's because we're made in his image. You know, that curiosity that we have is because God gave us that as a trait that he would like to share with us. And I think he's very pleased at the fact that we humans send people out, to space with spaceships, and we use telescopes, and we dive to the depths of the ocean just so we can discover the wonders that he's put there for us to learn about. And I think he's happy that we're trying to use those skills that he's given us.
Yeah, I think so too. What a privilege, Tom. I think that's part of that command to be fruitful and multiply, that we always want to do better, reach further, and maybe it's even what's written in our hearts that we want to reach closer to God, in a sense. So we're always pushing those boundaries, and you were really at the center of that for many, many years. So thank you for writing about it, for telling us about it, and I know you're not done yet, so continued blessings on all the work that you are still doing now.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a great privilege to represent my country, the U.S., in space. And it was a great privilege to go as a Catholic to, have that realization that I'm in some way getting to appreciate a little bit better what God has put here for us to enjoy and to utilize.
Yeah. And through your writings, we are able to appreciate it a little better too. So thank you for that, Tom.
A privilege for that.
That was a conversation I had with Tom Jones earlier this week. Tom Jones is a scientist, a speaker, author, pilot, and veteran NASA astronaut. He is the author of several books, including Skywalking, an astronaut's memoir. You can learn more at astronauttomjones.com. The children's book, Jesus in Space, A True Story That's Out of This World, which tells the story of bringing the Eucharist into space, is written by Cecilia Chacon and illustrated by Gabor Utomo, and published by Pauline Books and Media. Here now is Grace Lee with Desperado from her debut album, Love Crusading.
The moon is shining so bright tonight, and my insomnia's a bittersweet affliction. Don't need anyone to love tonight. Did my melancholia start feeling like a drug addiction? I guess I'm feeling alone tonight. Yeah, I know I tend to be so full of contradictions. Can't look myself in the
Listening to Grace Lee with Desperado from her debut album, Love Crusadin. Grace Lee is a young singer-songwriter from Dallas, Texas, who always dreamed of pursuing music, but it wasn't until a difficult time in her life that, through the intercession of St. Raphael the Archangel, she was able to finally fully embrace her gifts. Grace has been recording and releasing new singles and now has a new album coming out, Love Crusadin. We've been hearing some of the songs from that album. It's published through Novum Records. And so to tell us more, I am now joined by Grace Lee. Grace, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's so good to meet you.
So good to meet you. Thank you so much for having me.
I don't know how old you are, so it's kind of like a weird, it seems to me a little strange question to ask you what growing up was like. But yeah, so you live in Dallas. Did you grow up in Dallas?
Yes. I'm originally from New Jersey, actually. And my family and I, we moved to Oklahoma back in like, I think it was around like 2009. I was around 12 years old. Because it was just getting too expensive to live in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And so I grew up mostly in Oklahoma. And then I moved to Dallas on my own. I think it was December of 2020.
Okay, so yes. You recently moved to Dallas on your own. Your family's still in Oklahoma.
Yes.
Catholic family, I presume? You grew up Catholic?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Other brothers or sisters?
Yes, I have a younger sister and an older brother.
Okay, good. So. And is it a musical household?
Well, my siblings and I, we grew up taking piano lessons kind of on and off throughout elementary and middle school. I was always obsessed with piano.
Oh yeah.
And even when we didn't take lessons, I would just go ahead and just kind of play on my own. And I knew from a young age that I always wanted to pursue music, but it was always this magical kind of unattainable dream in my head. It wasn't until I think it was fall of 2022. Yes, I was going through a very difficult time in my life, and I had heard of Saint Raphael the Archangel being the patron saint of healing.
Yes,
and so I prayed to Saint Raphael the Archangel for healing, and the next day, I met someone named. I ended up meeting someone named Raphael who gave me a book titled Healing, which is like a
that's hilarious.
That's a whole other. Story but it was definitely providential and miraculous. And I still can't believe to this day that happened to me. And I'm so grateful to receive that gift. And so that all happened. And then shortly after that, I ended up writing a poem, to Saint Raphael. And it was after writing that poem that it just became very clear to me that I had to, keep making things and I wanted to embrace music and I wanted to embrace this gift that the Lord gave me and let the Lord take me wherever he wanted with that.
So
it was after that where I just started writing music kind of obsessively and I couldn't stop.
Right. No, that's wonderful. And I want to get back to that. But I kind of like you skipped ahead. I was curious to know. So when you were studying piano or just playing the piano on your own, were you writing songs or were you just playing like
I was
etudes
just kind
from
of,
Beethoven?
No, I was just kind of tinkering around, and I'm not very proficient at piano at all, actually. Again, we took lessons, on and off, and I, you know, forgot a lot of about like music theory and all that kind of stuff. And now I know chords. I kind of use piano and guitar as like a vehicle to write songs.
Okay.
But growing up, I didn't really write very many songs.
Okay, so you
songs.
Weren't, and were you involved? Like, you didn't do music in church or anything like that?
No. I sing in the choir for like a little bit, maybe, but I didn't take it too seriously.
Okay,
I was
so
in
you
band
weren't
in school, but it was just like, when I was very young, like elementary and middle school, I would just kind of tinker around on piano and I wouldn't write songs, but I do remember in high school, I would try to write songs, but I was so scared of what everyone would think of me. And I would only do it when everyone was out of the house.
Right.
And I was alone. And I would like secretly like record myself like writing things. But
that's,
they were so terrible
that's
back
funny.
Then. But
okay, so it's not like you haven't resurrected any of those songs that are like big hits.
Mm-mm, not from you know, when I was in high school or
so it
younger,
sounds like the music, so this new album, this is all fairly recent then.
Yes. I actually don't think that I would have had anything interesting to say in high school. Because,
again,
it was.
I hear you. I hear you.
So I'm actually I'm really grateful for even that like difficult period of my life. Again, when I said like around fall of 2022, because it was only after that like very hard time that I had like, I think I had anything interesting to say.
Yeah. That's usually how it happens.
Yeah,
for sure. And so the songs in the album, there are 10 songs, correct?
Yes.
These are all songs that came out of that time in your life?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So why Love Crusading?
So this is it's a concept album. So I called it Love Crusading because the album basically, it takes you on a love crusade, like a fight for love. And it kind of like, it kind of goes through this journey of, you know, fighting for love in the midst of human brokenness and all the lessons learned along the way and like what you gain from that, what you lose from that,
okay,
all that
I
kind
get
of
it.
Stuff. And so
I get it. Can I just say I love concept albums. So the idea is that people
oh
should
my gosh.
Listen. No, but people the idea is that people should listen the whole thing together.
Yes,
that's
thank you so much. I'm so glad you like concept albums and thank you for
I
saying
do,
that because
but can I just say that but they're hard because it's like a commitment. Like I have to
yes.
sit with my headphones and listen to the like close my eyes on my couch and listen to the whole thing and honestly, most people don't do that. But okay, so that's good. So if people are paying attention, this is the idea. But it doesn't mean that people can't just listen to songs
right,
individually.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Okay, so then the song, like we already heard Give Me Desire and we mm-hmm. heard Desperado. So those are songs that are part of that crusade, that mm-hmm. Love Crusade journey.
Yes, yes. From start to finish.
From start to finish.
Yes.
Okay, so then now that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing I was going to ask you, like, Give Me Desire, it sounds very clear. I mean, you're asking, like, Saint Joseph, you know, like, that's very clearly Catholic. Desperado, a little bit, but not so much so.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to end with a song called My Heart Broken. That just mm-hmm. sounds like a total secular pop song.
Mm-hmm.
Super fun.
Yes.
Is there a reason or is there a combination? Like, how do you...
Yeah, I'm glad you noticed that because I always had a little bit of trouble kind of categorizing this album.
Yeah.
Because I want to say, for the most part, I've been saying it's like essentially a pop record, at least production-wise and mm-hmm. sonically.
Yeah, absolutely.
With a little bit of twang and a little bit
yeah.
of country influence in there. But when it comes to the songwriting and the content, there's like a mix of, I feel like I write from personal experience and mm-hmm. as a Catholic, that just kind of naturally comes out to me.
Yeah, of course.
Sometimes, you know?
Of course.
And if I want to like explicitly mention a saint or the name of Jesus, I don't let that hinder me in my
mm-hmm.
songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are glimmers of my faith kind of weaving throughout the album, but in a very just I didn't force that. Like when I'm writing a song, I'm like, I don't sit down and I'm not like, okay, I'm going to write a song about this scene. Going to write it. You know, I just let it come to me. And this is kind of the product of that.
I get it. No, So it's not like you're sitting down to write like a praise and worship song or it's going to, or it's a liturgical song that can be used for communion. Like it's not that. It is very much a pop. Indie sort of. Absolutely. And this final song, My Heart Broken, it's totally like I can imagine hearing it like even in a club, you know, like it's very, very fun.
That I love that one so much. It's so fun.
Okay, Grace, we're gonna leave it there. It's been so good meeting you and getting to listen to the music. I actually have to confess I only have heard the three tracks, those three, so I'm gonna have to go get the album and listen to the whole thing with my headphones on the couch so that I can enjoy the concept of that love crusade journey. Thank you for coming on the show today and telling us a little bit about you and about your music, and I'm sure it's going to bring a lot of joy and a lot of good vibes and wisdom to people who are listening.
I hope so. Thank you so much for having me. This was wonderful.
You can find Grace Lee on your social media and listen to her music on all streaming platforms. And you can also learn about Novum Records at their website, novumrecords.com. If you missed any part of this interview, head on over to slmedia.org/podcast. All our programs are archived there. Here now to take us out is Grace Lee with My Heart Broken from her debut album, Love Crusade.
Well, I've got a confession to make. Did you know you made my day better? Yeah, I went home after the party and wrote you a 5-page love letter. I wasn't quite ready to leave my house again, but I came out of my hermit cave. That's when I met you, and now I want you, babe. I think I'm ready for my next cruel heartbreak. I'm trying to meet my man, 'cause lately I've been obsessed with him. So could you be the one? Should we give it a chance? But if we got it wrong, then no.
Listening to Grace Lee with My Heart Broken from her album Love Crusaden. This is a special edition of the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro. Send me your comments to pedro@slmedia.org. Hello and welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro. As we enter the season of Lent, more so because we are about to celebrate Easter, I think, it seems now that there is always a new film about the life of Jesus, or something sort of related to Easter. More and more, these come from Christian-based producers, and this year is no different. What is different about this year's new film is that it is very Catholic. The Last Supper doesn't just tell the story of the days leading to Jesus' passion and resurrection, but it tells the story of that meal that changed everything. It is a film that makes it very clear that Jesus is the bread of life, that he is the lamb that was sacrificed for us. It's really a film about the Eucharist, and that's different. The Last Supper went into theaters on March 14th, and to tell us more about it earlier this week, I spoke with director and writer Mauro Borrelli. Mauro, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's good to meet you.
Thank you for having me here with you guys.
So really, Mauro, tell me, do we really need another film about Jesus? What is different about The Last Supper?
I think this film is different from other films done before because it takes focus on this great moment, which is the New Covenant and the Last Supper. And when I was doing a research, you know, and starting with looking at the beautiful Leonardo da Vinci Last Supper,
okay,
I was intrigued by, you know, how to make that painting come to life, you know. And then I thought, well, I'm sure that there's so many movies made about it. And then I do a research and no one made an actual movie all around that such important moment, but there's no movie that explored that deeply in detail, and not even a play in a theater. And so I said, you know what, let me see, because I'm very curious to know what they were eating, how the bread, where the wine was coming from.
Uh-huh.
Did they have animals going around the kitchen? Did they have kids? And what about,
yes,
who was serving the food, you know? And we always see the,
yes,
moment, and we always hear the word when we go to mass, you know, and we hear, you know, and we see the celebrating moment of the Eucharistia. And but I thought it would be great to offer to an audience a more complex and more three-dimensional world of that moment, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so that was my challenge, you know, as a painter. I grew up as a kid in Italy, going to churches and watching all this beautiful iconography of a painting. You know, like I'm thinking, like I try to find out more. You know, words are important, but images, they're so strong.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I want to give it to all those Christian, Catholic, and even non-Christian, non-Catholic, a better idea of what happened in a such important moment in the history, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. And thank you for, I was going to ask you what had been the inspiration. So the painting of The Last Supper, Da Vinci's, I think for me, it's very clear that the film is about Jesus being present in the Eucharist. That's very Catholic. That's different for me, I think. Would you agree?
Yes. There are two major element that moved me in exploring this film. The first one was, who is the actual protagonist in the story? Which eyes, through,
yes,
which eyes we watch the story, right?
Yes.
And which is the arc, the dramatic arc. So, mm-hmm, I figured out Peter was,
yep,
a great element to see the story through his eyes. And especially because Peter represents the man, you know, as a human being, you know,
mm-hmm,
sometimes we think we are so strong, we're so invincible, especially these days where nobody ever admitted that they're weak, you know, they all want to be strong, you know,
mm-hmm,
and so that's what Peter is. He believes his faith is unshakable. He believes that he's the one that should be in charge to defend Jesus if something happened, and he finds out actually that as a human being is also fragile. And we're all,
mm-hmm,
fragile. So what our hope is that don't count 100% on our strength, but borrowing the strength for something that is above us, maybe through pray or through other, you know what I mean? Like, so we can't be arrogant and thinking,
mm-hmm,
that we're invincible. We always have to be ready because temptation and weakness can come at any time. So,
mm-hmm,
this was the dramatic structure. But the message underneath that I really, and it's more subtle, but I really like, was how the Eucharistia works. Because, you know, when I was a kid, I served as an altar boy a few times when I was 10 years old.
Yeah,
the local church, and I remember the moment of the Eucharistia, and I hear the words like it's like a mantra that you hear so many times, and I never really had a grasp on those words. This is my blood. This is my body. You know, like,
yeah.
And so I realized that because I had to study a little bit of the Torah and the Gospel together,
mm-hmm,
I realized that during the Last Supper, the Passover, the Jewish are sacrificing a lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood of the lamb is being put over the door to,
mm-hmm,
as a as an offering to God for sparing the son of the firstborn of the Jewish that they need to escape to Egypt, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wait a second, they're doing this for hundreds of years, right?
Yeah.
It's almost like when they will ever stop. So when this death with God will ever stop. So I'm thinking, it's like having a credit card and you keep paying interest, but you never pay in full, right?
Yeah.
And then Jesus comes and he becomes the Lamb and he pays in full this big death. And I'm like, whoa, we are talking about human sacrifice here. This is not just word. This is really replaced. And then I go deeper on that. And I, for example, we bring a lamb, right, into the dinner. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure the lamb was not, the bones, they were not broken, right?
Yeah.
Because in the law of the Jewish, the sacrifice of lamb has to be unblemished, has to be pure, has to be pure like Jesus was pure. In fact, it has to be inspected, right, by the priest. Same way Jesus is inspected by Caiaphas later on and by the Roman later on and is found pure. So he is the Lamb. For the first time, I opened my eyes on the meaning, you know?
Yeah, of course, of course. And I think that through the film, the eyes of a lot of people are going to be opened as well. It was clear that Peter is the protagonist. He's the one with the main arc. But I was very moved by the characters of Caiaphas and obviously on Judas as well, that they're very human, very humanized, very, you know, much less three-dimensional than they're usually portrayed. Why did you want to make those choices about those two characters, Caiaphas and Judas?
It comes with Peter, right? Because I needed to a Peter counterpart. So if as a human being, we're all fragile, right? We think we're strong, we're all fragile. But then Peter, through the prayer and through, let's say, the strength and his faith, not in his body, not in his mind, just the faith, is able to overcome his denial. Mm-hmm. I want to show what happens when you don't have that strength.
Yeah.
So I bring Judah as a counterpart. Mm-hmm. And is basically the other side of the medal. It's like the man, the human being that when he's faced with temptation, when he's faced with something that goes wrong, he doesn't find the right way and he'll end up into the darkness, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to do that, to make that working, I had to create a sympathetic character that was more human, humanized, you know, so we can see ourselves into both of them, and then we say, okay, great, we're both with that, we both have doubts, but I want to be like Peter, you know, I want to, in case something goes wrong in my life, I want to be strong and go over it, you know.
Of course, and
Caiaphas, I want to show that everybody had their reason. And and Caiaphas, in his limited mind, he wanted to keep peace. He wanted to keep a relationship with the Romans. So he tried to. He saw Jesus as something that was maybe undermining the stability of the moment there. And then I wanted to show that he as a person, not him as a representative of a community, but him as a personal level, he's moved by jealousy. Like I was inspired by Salieri with the Mozart, you know.
Yes. Yeah, no, it was, I very much appreciated those two characters. Mauro, that's all the time we have, but
yes.
Thank you so much for joining us and for telling us about the film, giving us a little more insight. I'm very excited about this film. Like I said, I think it's going to help a lot of people understand a lot of things that we don't usually think about how Jesus is present in the Eucharist. And so thank you for making the film and for opening our eyes a little bit today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye.
That was a conversation I had with Mauro Borelli, director of the new film, The Last Supper, which went into theaters on March 14th. You can learn more at thelastsupper.movie. Here now is Kate Curran with Be Thou My Vision from her Volume 4 EP.
Be thou my vision.
listening to Kate Curran with Be Thou My Vision from her Volume 4 EP. We met Kate Curran in 2022 and learned all about her creative and unique approach to classic Christian hymns. Kate is a trumpet player, originally from Ireland, but now calls Atlanta her home, where she is a youth minister. Kate has continued recording traditional hymns, but as you have been hearing, the approach is not traditional. And so, to tell us more, I am now joined by Kate Curran. Kate, welcome back to the Salt and Light Hour. It's so good to see you.
Hi, Deacon. It's great to be back. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. It's good to see you, and it's good to hear that there's more music. And yeah. I guess I didn't understand last time we spoke that the idea was to keep recording hymns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, correct. Yeah. So there's now a total of 12 hymns recorded, which has been a really fun project to work on.
Okay, so 4 volumes, 3 hymns per volume, and correct. Then maybe you might put all 12 songs into an album. Is that
correct? The idea. Well, I would love to at some point put everything onto a vinyl record for probably 10 people that want it, but I would love to put it on an album, and we would release it digitally as well, but the dream behind putting them all in one place is so that I can actually make a vinyl record.
I like the idea. So it's traditional hymns and also in a more traditional medium. I like that. I would get one of those vinyls.
Awesome.
So what's the fascination with traditional Christian hymns?
Ooh, I think that's a great question. I feel like the lyrics are more noble. There's a beauty that has been lost a little bit in modern architecture and just in the world around us. There's this minimalism that has crept into the world, and I feel like there's one of the transcendentals of God is beauty, and so in our music today I feel like there's just been this erosion of real noble lyrics and music. Melodically, everything, you know, we don't have many Beethovens and Bachs and Mozarts walking around anymore.
Right.
And so for me, the fascination has just been this ancient beauty that evokes in my heart something a little bit more than some of the more contemporary songs that are out there. And that's not to say there's no place for those types of music either. But for me, when I was approaching this project, I wanted to go backwards to represent something that is ever ancient and ever new.
Right. And you're not just talking about the lyrics. You're also talking, is there something about the melodies as well?
Yeah, I think these are hymns that are so familiar to people. And sometimes in the debate that goes on continuously in the music world, particularly in the church, you know, people that are pro-Latin versus, you know, the Vatican II kind of division that has come about, there is, I think there's just this familiarity that some of these more traditional hymns have, despite people's preferences. They still know these, they can recall these melodies and these lyrics, and so again the idea was to represent some of these ancient treasures to a new generation of young people that are coming up that maybe are not as familiar with them, but also to the older generation to remind them of, you know, make, you know, the nostalgia and the beauty that lies therein, and the melodies. Yes, I'm not necessarily saying that particularly, I think particularly some of the lyrics of these hymns, you know, of Thomas Aquinas, things like that are very beautiful, and just, I could never write something as profound as him, but and the melodies too are very beautiful. I wouldn't necessarily say that they're more noble than you know, modern melodies, but just as a whole, there's just something very beautiful about some of these older hymns that I wanted to just bring to the forefront again.
Yeah. Is there also something about the tradition? I mean, you mentioned architecture earlier, and I'm wondering if just in general, that, I mean, you have a deep affection for the traditions of the church in
Oh,
general,
very
not
much.
just the music.
Yes.
Where does
Not
that
just the
come
music.
from?
I'm European. I think some of it is the fact that I'm from Europe. I grew up in
Yeah.
churches that were ornate and beautiful, and the design of churches are meant to elevate the heart and mind. You're meant to walk in and be taken by the beauty and look upwards toward God, to the creator of all things, that is good and beauty and truth itself. And so growing up in Europe, it definitely has given me appreciation for things that are old.
Yes.
I love it.
Yes.
And yeah, that's definitely in architecturally in every in those senses as well. It's definitely plays into the to an appreciation for things that have been.
But not just because they're old, but because there's a maybe a strength there or a rootedness.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I think it's remarkable to me to even to think of Notre Dame that burned recently in France, and to think the people that built these monuments were poor. They had nothing. And I struggle with that today because I see how much money it takes to build a church. The parish that I'm currently in are fundraising, and it's going to take years for us to get even close to laying the foundation, let alone putting in things that are ornate. And it's such a tragedy because to go back hundreds of years when they were building these ancient churches, they gave everything, what little they had, to the church, and they made them incredibly ornate and incredibly beautiful because they wanted, obviously, to give glory to God, to give him the finest that they had, but also in that beauty to enrapture the heart, the human heart, to help us to pray and to look toward God. And it's incredible to me that some of that has been lost. So even in more modern churches, there's a minimalism that has crept in. And again, I'm not saying objectively that's right or wrong, but I personally, I like the ornate because it is regal and noble, and it elevates the heart and mind to something. There's something different about this place, about this space, this sanctuary, this sacred ground that I'm on.
It's set
Right.
up, it's set apart, which I guess is the definition
Right.
of something that is holy. So when you
Exactly.
Set out to choose 12 hymns, and honestly, had you asked me, I don't know if I could have come up with 12, maybe 8, but how did you pick them?
Oh my
How did you
gosh, it's a great
choose?
question. Some of it was very intentional. Some of it was literally 2 or 3 days before I'm booked to go to the studio, and I'm scrambling, being like, okay, what do I do? I hope some of it was all led, or all of it was led by the Holy Spirit. But the first and or sorry, the second EP, I included the first and second, sorry, I included two hymns from Thomas Aquinas. So he was in my mind very much in terms of just some of his writings are so profound. And I wanted to bring some Latin to the forefront. So on the second volume, there's O Salutaris. And I would have done more, but some of the measures, the meters in some of these hymns are irregular. And so I wasn't able to kind of capture that the way I wanted to. But So there was a desire to bring some Latin, and particularly Thomas Aquinas. I wanted to. I just think his Eucharistic hymn was of Godhead Here in Hiding was incredibly beautiful. So they were kind of in my mind. I wanted to honor Mary, Our Lady. So in volume three, there was Hail Queen of Heaven enthroned above. I did a song to her, and then the others were very much just things again that I've heard in church over. In at different moments, different seasons, I heard the voice of Jesus. I don't think I heard that one growing up, but I heard it in at Mass one day when I was in a Sunday Mass. I loved the melody, and I wanted to play around with the rhythm and just make it different. And the same with the King of Love, My Shepherd. Again, some of these hymns are just the lyrics are so moving. And so, yeah, these are just hymns that over the years have struck a chord with me in some capacity. And so some of them were picked, as I said, 2 days before going to the
Yes.
studio. Some of them were kind of on my heart for a while, but
Yeah. Were there
they
any
all came about.
that you did not know growing up that were new? I mean, you just mentioned the one that you heard at Mass once, but were there others that you thought,
Yeah, I
or
never heard of Now Thank We All Our God. I can't even remember. Again,
oh.
that's one that I recently, within the last two, three years maybe,
Okay.
when I began the project, I didn't even know that hymn. Lo, Upon the Altar Lies, that's up from the third volume. Again, that was one
Yeah.
I had never heard, because a big focus
Okay.
of some of all of these projects as well has been Eucharistic. I wanted to
Okay.
record things that were Eucharistic and had that theme throughout it. So there's a couple of tracks on each one that kind of is centered around the Eucharist. So that was another one that I had never heard of. Again, I can't even remember where I discovered it, but I did, and I thought it was beautiful. So that's kind of like a lullaby
Yeah.
style that I did after the third
That's beautiful.
volume. So yeah, there was definitely a
I'm glad you included Now Thank We All Our God, because I can never get the title. I always want to say Now We Thank, like it's like whoever came up with that title didn't know grammar. Now We Thank All, like it just doesn't work. And but Now Thank We All Our, so now I'll finally we'll be able to get the title
You
right.
got it now.
Kate, thank you so much. It's good to connect. Thank you
You're
that
so
we were able to connect
welcome.
finally. And I'm glad that even though you set out to do 12, you could continue doing volume 5 and volume 6 and volume 7, and maybe there we can discover some other hymns that we didn't know existed, as you as I told you last time, as you Kate Curranize them and give them your own spin.
Yeah, that's the hope. I left it open-ended so we can continue. If the Holy Spirit decides that that's something he'd like to
That's
see happen,
great.
I'm all here for it.
That's great. Well,
Brilliant.
thank you for doing that and for telling us a little bit about it today, Kate. Take care.
Yeah, you're so welcome. God bless.
You can learn more about Kate Curran at her website, katecurranmusic.net, and it's Kate with a K and Curran, Curran, katecurranmusic.net. I'll put a link on our site so you can find it easily, and you can also find her music wherever you stream your music. If you missed part of this interview, you can head on over to our website, slmedia.org/podcast. That's where we archive all our programs. Here now is Kate Curran with Now Thank We All Our God from her Volume 4 EP.
Now thank we all our God with heart and hands and voices.
Listening to Kate Curran with her arrangement of Now Thank We All Our God from her Volume 4 EP. And that concludes this special edition of the Sultanite Hour. Remember that you can listen to all our programs at our website, slmedia.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our streaming platform, SL Plus, Sultanite Plus, so you can watch all our programs and our TV network, Sultanite TV. And to listen to the Sultanite Hour easily, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. And also, you can listen to us on your Amazon Echo, your Alexa, or your Google device. Just ask for the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast. I'm Deacon Pedro. Thank you for being with us today.